Welcome to the deep dive. Ever dreamt of that perfect, crystal-clear epoxy creation? You know, a stunning river table, maybe some delicate jewelry or a custom coaster.
Oh yeah, you see those amazing results online, that wow factor.
Exactly. But then that little voice creaks in, right? That fear. What if my project turns into a sticky, bubbly, just frustrating disaster?
It's so common. I hear it all the time. The internet shows the glamour shots, the perfect finish, but it rarely shows the struggles, the failures behind the scenes.
And having seen, well, literally thousands of projects go wrong, the real insight isn't just what goes wrong, but why. And crucially, how simple steps can prevent all that frustration.
That's it. And that's really our mission today. We're diving deep into the world of epoxy resin, aiming to conquer that fear.
Right. And our guide for this journey is none other than Hamad Shahsavandi from EpoxyCar.com. I mean, this guy's a true master. Huh. He's troubleshooted for over 3,000 students, wrote the money-making wood pieces. He's here to help us get past hoping for luck and really embrace the science behind the art.
It is a science. Predictable once you know the rules.
So what can you expect today? We're going to unpack 5 critical mistakes. The ones that waste your time, your money.
And your sanity sometimes.
Definitely that too. Think of this as your shortcut to confidence. We want to help you go from just, you know, using epoxy to really mastering your materials, getting those flawless results.
Let's do it. Where should we start? Hamad points to one big one right off the bat.
Yeah, the fatal ratio error. Trusting your eyes over the scale. It sounds basic, doesn't it? Mix part A and part B. But why is getting that ratio precisely right so critical? And why do so many beginners, maybe thinking like they're baking a cake or something, just reach for those graduated kitchen measuring cups? Is it just a tiny bit off, or is that approach fundamentally flawed?
It's fundamentally flawed. And the reason is simple. Specific gravity. Basically, 100 milliliters of resin just doesn't weigh the same as 100 milliliters of hardener. They look the same volume-wise, but they're different densities. And epoxy curing, at its heart, it's a chemical reaction, a precise molecular band called stoichiometry. Think of it like this. Every single molecule of part A, the resin, needs its perfect dance partner from part B, the hardener.
Like finding a chair in musical chairs.
Kinda, yeah. If they don't all pair up in exactly the right proportions, that chemical reaction, that dance, it just can't complete properly. And that leaves you with, well, a sticky, soft, maybe even totally uncured mess.
So just eyeballing it with a cup, even if the lines look right, the actual weight of the molecules you're mixing is probably off.
Exactly. And that throws the whole chemical balance out of whack.
I can just picture the sticky coaster tragedy now.
Yeah.
You're making a beautiful set, maybe 4 coasters. You measure carefully, or so you think, using volume. You pour them out. And 3 cure perfectly hard and clear. But that 4th one, it stays stubbornly tacky.
Forever.
Ugh, the worst. And that tiny, almost invisible volume error, maybe the cup wasn't perfectly labeled, maybe the markings were slightly off, maybe you read it wrong, just that little bit was enough to ruin it.
And think about the waste, the materials, the time you spent.
And the sheer frustration of having an incomplete set, it's brutal.
It really is. So the solution from, you know, the resourceful artisan's perspective, it's straightforward, but absolutely non-negotiable.
Let me guess.
A scale.
A digital scale, yes. With at least 0.1 gram, or even better, 0.01 gram precision. This isn't some fancy, expensive lab gear. It's an affordable tool, and honestly, it's the most important investment for getting consistent results.
Okay, so how do you use it correctly? Walk us through it.
Right. So you put your empty mixing cup on the scale, hit the tear button that zeroes it out. Then you pour in your part A, the resin, watching the scale until you hit the exact weight you need according to the manufacturer's ratio.
Got it.
Then, and this is important, you hit tear again to zero out the weight of the resin and the cup.
Ah.
And then you carefully add your part B, the hardener, watching the scale until you hit that precise weight needed for the ratio. This whole process, it just removes all the guesswork. It's not about lacking skill. It's just respecting the chemistry involved.
Right.
So the scale is foundational, non-negotiable for consistency. But, okay, let's say you nail the ratio, perfect chemistry. There's still another big nightmare waiting, right? Bubbles.
Oh, bubbles. The bane of clear epoxy.
Beyond the ratio issue, they seem to pop up everywhere, turning that crystal clear vision into something cloudy or pitted. And often, Hamad says, it comes down to how you mix. Like, mixing too aggressively.
Exactly. It's basic physics, really. We're talking about laminar versus turbulent flow.
Okay, break that down.
So when you whip your resin really hard and fast, like you're whisking eggs,
Right.
you're creating turbulent flow. You're violently folding air into the mixture. This creates thousands and thousands of tiny suspended microbubbles. And these are the really bad ones because they're almost impossible to get out later, even with a heat gun or a torch.
So a torch won't save you from those.
Not from the really tiny ones you whip in deep. The goal is what's called laminar flow. Think smooth, gentle folding, like you're carefully folding melted chocolate, keeping the layers flowing smoothly over each other, not churning it up.
That melted chocolate analogy works. Gentle folding, not frantic whisking. Okay. So that prevents those insidious microbubbles that might cause, say, a cloudy jewelry pendant.
Precisely.
You spend ages putting tiny dried flowers in a mold, right? Meticulously arranging everything. But then you get impatient and mix your resin really quickly.
Thinking you're saving time.
Yeah. And it looks okay in the cup, maybe a few surface bubbles you think you can torch off.
Yeah.
But after it cures, the whole piece just has this subtle permanent haze or cloudiness.
Those are the microbubbles you just whipped in. They get trapped and they ruin that delicate transparency you're going for.
So frustrating. What's the technique to avoid that? You mentioned a pro technique.
Yes, the two-cup technique. It's incredibly effective, and a lot of pros swear by it. It sounds simple, but it makes a huge difference.
Okay, lay it on us.
First, pour your perfectly weighed resin and hardener into your first mixing cup. Then mix slowly, deliberately, for the full time the manufacturer recommends, usually around 3 to 5 minutes. And be methodical. Scrape the sides, scrape the bottom. Don't rush this.
Slow and steady, scraping everything. Got it. Then what? Is the second cup really that essential? Can't you just mix longer in the first one?
It's absolutely critical. This is the key step. After that initial mix, you pour the entire mixture into a second, completely clean cup.
Okay, a whole new cup.
Yep. And then, using a new clean stir stick, don't reuse the first one. You continue to mix gently for another minute or two.
Why the second cup and stick? What does that actually achieve?
It ensures that any unmixed material that might have been clinging stubbornly to the sides or bottom of that first cup gets fully incorporated. You know, tiny streaks of unmixed resin or hardener you might not even see.
Ah, like a safety net for the mix.
Exactly. It's like a final insurance mix. This guarantees a truly uniform cure and helps prevent those annoying soft or sticky spots that can happen even if your ratio was spot on. It often solves that mystery people have. My ratio was perfect. Why is it still sticky? Incomplete mixing is often the hidden culprit.
That two-cup method sounds like a bit of extra fuss, maybe an extra cup to clean, but clearly it's worth it for avoiding those sticky surprises.
Totally worth it.
Okay, so we've got the ratio right. With our scale, we've mixed gently using the two-cup method. We're golden, right? Pour away.
Not quite yet, because even with that perfect mix in your cup, your environment can still sneak in and sabotage the whole thing. Mistake number three. Ignoring those invisible enemies.
Right, the workspace itself. Because epoxy isn't just goo, it's a live chemical reaction happening.
And it's highly sensitive to its surroundings. Temperature and humidity are the big ones.
So tell us about the chemistry there. Why does temperature matter so much?
Well, the curing reaction itself is exothermic, meaning it generates its own heat as it cures.
Okay.
The ideal ambient temperature, usually somewhere between 22 to 25 degrees Celsius, that's about 72 to 77 Fahrenheit. That sweet spot allows the reaction to proceed at a nice, controlled, steady pace.
And if it's too cold,
Yeah.
say you're working in a chilly garage in winter.
Bad news. Cold air makes both the resin and hardener really thick, like cold honey or molasses,
Yeah.
which, number one, makes it way harder to mix properly and traps bubbles like crazy. And number two, it slows down that chemical reaction so much that it might never reach its full potential hardness or its full chemical resistance. It just stalls out.
Okay, so cold is bad. What about the flip side? Humidity. Is damp air a problem too?
Oh, humidity is the enemy of a perfectly clear, glossy finish, big time. Moisture in the air, H2O, can react chemically with the hardener part, specifically the abingdon component in most epoxy hardeners.
React how?
It creates something called a mean blush. It shows up as this cloudy, sometimes greasy or waxy feeling film on the surface of the cured epoxy.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's truly disheartening. You do everything else right, and then this invisible moisture in the air ruins your beautiful, clear finish.
Nobody wants I mean blush.
Hmm.
So if our workshop needs to be more like a controlled lab, what are the essential tools and what's the specialist's approach to actually controlling temperature and humidity?
You definitely need a couple of simple, inexpensive tools. First, a digital thermometer hygrometer. combo unit. It tells you the room temperature and the relative humidity. Those are your two critical data points for the air.
Okay, thermometer, hygrometer, got it. Anything else?
A laser thermometer, also called an infrared or IR thermometer, is also super useful. You can point it right at your resin bottles or the surface of the wood you're working on to check their actual temperature, not just the air temp.
So you know everything's at the right starting point.
Yeah.
Which brings up acclimatization, right? You can't just grab your resin from a cold shed and start pouring.
Absolutely not. That's a huge part of the technique. You need to bring everything, your part A resin, your part B hardener, and the piece you're actually pouring onto, like your wood slab, into your controlled workspace at least 24 hours before you plan to mix and pour.
24 hours. Wow.
Yeah, it gives everything time to reach a stable, uniform temperature. And critically, you need to control that humidity. Aim for below 50% relative humidity if you can.
How do you do that if you live somewhere damp?
If you're in a humid climate, investing in a small dehumidifier for your workspace is honestly a game changer. It makes a massive difference in preventing that amine blush. These steps, they just ensure the chemistry happens the way it's supposed to without interference from the environment.
That makes total sense. Mm. Setting the stage for success, literally. Okay, leads us to mistake number 4. Rushing the pour onto an unprepared surface.
Mm.
You could have the perfect mix, the perfect temperature, perfect humidity. But if you pour that beautiful resin onto a surface that's contaminated, or especially if it's porous and not sealed, you're still heading for trouble.
This is where the science of the seal coat comes in, particularly with wood, but also other porous things like concrete or even some plastics. Wood is the classic example, though.
Why is wood so tricky?
Because it's full of tiny microscopic air channels. It's naturally porous. Think of it like a bundle of straws.
Okay.
Now, remember that exothermic reaction, the resin generating heat as it cures? Well, if you pour a deep layer of resin directly onto raw, unsealed wood, that heat warms up the air trapped inside those tiny wood pores. What happens when air warms up?
It expands. And wants to escape.
Exactly. It expands and pushes its way out, rising up through your fresh liquid epoxy as a continuous stream of bubbles, sometimes for hours. It literally looks like the wood itself is breathing bubbles into your pore.
Ah, so that's the breathing wood slab phenomenon. I've heard people talk about that, especially with river tables.
It's incredibly common and frustrating. You pour your expensive deep pour resin into that beautiful live edge slab mold.
Yeah.
And then you spend the next 6-8 hours babysitting it, constantly hitting the surface with a torch, trying to pop bubbles that just keep relentlessly rising from the edges where the epoxy meets the wood.
And you end up with those annoying little pinholes right along the wood line, even after all that effort.
Precisely. And Hamad Shahsavandi, in his book, The Money Making Wood Pieces, he really hammers this home. Mastering the seal coat isn't just like an optional step, it's fundamental to preventing this exact problem, especially with deeper pores.
Okay, so what is the solution? How do you do a seal coat properly?
It's actually pretty straightforward. You apply a very thin layer of your regular epoxy, just a small batch, directly onto the wood surface first. You can use a brush or a little squeegee. You're not pouring deep, just aiming to wet out the surface and let it soak into those pores.
Like a primer coat in painting.
Exactly like a primer. This thin layer penetrates into those surface pores and basically seals them off. You let that seal coat cure until it's at least tacky or maybe fully cured, depending on the epoxy system, usually about 4 to 6 hours.
And that creates a barrier.
It creates an airtight barrier. Once that seal coat is set, then you can pour your main, deeper flood coat over the top. Now, when that flood coat heats up, the air and the wood can't escape through the sealed surface. No more endless bubbles from the wood.
Confidence for the flood coat. That's huge, especially for anyone working with wood. Okay, that brings us to our 5th and final mistake. And I think this one resonates with a lot of us who spend time online.
Ah, yes. The hypnotic videos.
Believing in the magic pour. Or what we're calling the satisfying video trap. Mm-hmm. The internet, you know, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, it's just saturated with these short, mesmerizing clips, perfect swirls, perfect cells, a single pour that looks like it magically creates a masterpiece in seconds.
They are satisfying to watch.
But they create such a dangerous myth, don't they? This idea of instant, effortless success.
Totally. And the key thing to realize, the big insight here, is that those videos are primarily entertainment. They're not really education.
Right.
They almost always omit the crucial 90% of the actual work that went into that piece before the pour even happened.
What kind of work are we talking about?
Oh, all the meticulous sanding of the wood to get it perfectly smooth. the careful, precise building of the mold to make sure it's level and leak-proof, the precise measurement of the resin and hardener we just talked about, the patient application of those seal coats.
All the stuff we just covered?
Exactly. All the prep work. Hours, sometimes days of preparation. The actual pour, the part they show in the 30-second clip, that's maybe only 10% of the total effort involved.
So watching those videos can lead beginners to just rush all that vital prep work.
Yeah, they see the magic pour and think, oh, I'll just mix them up and pour it. They expect those instant perfect results, and then they're inevitably disappointed and frustrated when it doesn't work out. It's a setup for failure, really.
And this is where the mindset really shifts, isn't it? From beginner to, well, to artisan.
Absolutely. A true master artisan, someone who consistently gets great results, understands that the pour itself is just the final step, the climax. It's not the whole story.
They understand that the other 90%, the patience, the precision, the respect for the process, the prep work, that's what actually guarantees the great result.
Precisely. Success in resin art, or really any craft, it isn't a single event. It's a process. It's built on a solid foundation of understanding the materials, the principles, the science. It's about embracing the journey of preparation.
Knowing that diligence pays off in the end. Okay, so let's bring this all back together for you, our listener.
Yeah.
What we've hopefully shown today is that these common epoxy mistakes, the long ratio, bad mixing, ignoring the environment, skipping surface prep, falling for the magic pour.
Yeah.
They aren't just bad luck.
Not at all.
They aren't some mysterious force working against you.
Yeah.
They are totally, completely preventable.
Yeah.
Just through knowledge and having a systematic approach.
You now have the tools, the insights from Hamad Shahsavandi and others, the understanding. You can move from feeling failure to actually creating with real confidence.
And if we zoom out for a second, look at the bigger picture.
Mm.
This whole deep dive illustrates something kind of profound, I think. Resin is just chemistry, right? It follows predictable rules.
Yep. Cause and effect.
And understanding its science shows that maybe a lot of things we perceive as magic or luck, you know, whether it's in a craft like this or learning a new skill, maybe even things in our daily lives, they aren't magic at all.
They're just processes. Processes that, once you understand them and respect them, give you predictable, desirable outcomes.
Which really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What other areas in life might you be approaching with that kind of magic pour mindset?
Ooh, that's a good question. Where else might we be skipping the prep, overlooking those critical foundation steps, hoping for an instant result?
That's definitely something to think about. So the final thought is, embrace this resourceful artisan mindset Hamad talks about. Apply that patience, that precision, that bit of scientific understanding, not just to your next epoxy project, but maybe any new skill or challenge you take on.
Because that is the real path to mastery, not just in resin, but in anything.
Well said. Thanks for diving deep with us today.